Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in an orphanage and graduated last in his high school class. In 1960, he and his brother borrowed $900 to buy a pizza store in Ypsilanti. In 1983, he bought the Detroit Tigers, and in 1998, he sold the pizza business, which had grown to 6,200 stores, for $1 billion. One chapter in one book changed his life. His name, Tom Monahan, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760, WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Tom Monahan, who bought the Detroit Tigers in 1983. Tom, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
It's good to be here, Jack.
Can we start by you telling us about your parents and your childhood?
Well, I was brought up, I was pretty poor. I was born in 1937 on March the 25th. My parents wanted me to be born on St. Patrick's Day, but it's 8 days later. I was a pretty rambunctious kid. I walked when I was 7 months, and I'd never heard of anybody that walked earlier than that. My dad died when I was four on Christmas Eve. He was a truck driver, and my mother went back to nursing school and put me in the first foster home in Ann Arbor for a few years, and then for 6 years in a Catholic orphanage in Jackson called St. Joseph's Home for Boys, which was run by Felician Sisters, very strict and very holy.
You were four. Christmas Eve, your dad passes.
Yes.
Your brother was two.
Yes.
Your mom, because of a lot of circumstances, you know, put you in foster homes, orphanages. How did you overcome that, Tom?
Well, I guess I didn't have much choice. In the orphanage, the sisters were good. We learned about God, and we learned about our faith. I think I probably had a much better grounding and formation in my faith than almost any Catholic because of this continuous and a good example. Mass every day, benediction every day. I was an altar boy when I was 7 years old. And so I certainly bought into the idea that I should be a good Catholic and why. And in fact, I wanted to be a priest in the time I was in the second grade. But then I discovered girls and got off track for a while. Eventually went to seminary for a year, but I got kicked out.
What did you get kicked out for?
Well, I think mischievousness. I got caught in pillow fights in the dorm, talking in the study hall, and things like that. In those days, they had so many vocations that they got good marks. They figured I didn't fit the mold.
Most every teenager wants to be liked, and there's terrific peer pressure, and they get ridiculed, mocked, questioned. What would you say to teenagers about believing in yourself, getting self-confidence?
Well, I would, first of all, I'd say in my own case, I had that problem myself. I was very conscious of the fact that I was poor, my clothes were threadbare, and particularly in high school, that was really painful. I had to keep my feet on the floor so they wouldn't see the holes in the bottom of my shoes. I had to roll my sleeves up above the elbow because I didn't want to see the holes in the elbow of my shirts, it was quite embarrassing, and I was always conscious of the fact that I didn't have a normal home like other kids did. While I was in high school, I primarily in the living in foster homes and farms, and I had to. And it was And so I felt kind of like an outsider, and so I've always felt sorry for people that weren't that were shunned and weren't popular. So I would say I want to go out of my way to befriend those types of people.
You graduate last in your high school class, and then you and your brother borrow $900 in 1960 to buy this little pizza place called Dominick's. Why did you do that?
Well, it was, I saw it as a way of getting through the University of Michigan. Now, you're probably wondering what I'm doing in the University of Michigan, one of the top schools in the country, when I was last in my class. Well, after I got out of high school, I decided that I'd better get my act together, because I really stopped studying when I got out of, kicked out of the seminary in the 10th grade. I just lost interest. I wasn't going to be a priest, and I didn't know what I was going to be. I liked architecture. And so I went to Ferris, and they didn't ask any questions. It was a very small school then, and I got in. I got good marks, and based on those marks, I was able to get into Michigan. The problem is I didn't have any money, and that's when I went in the Marine Corps and saved my money in the Marine Corps and lost it just before I got out to a real con man. And so I got out broke. So I wasn't able to stay in school. I went 3 weeks with no textbooks, dropped out, went in the next semester. But I was working so many hours that I had no time to study. And so I dropped out again after 3 weeks. And so this about this time, my brother approached me and said, there's a friend of mine has a pizza place for sale in Ypsilanti. Would you like to go in with me on it? And I said, well, I don't know anything about the pizza business. And he said, well, I worked in a pizza place before, and there's not that much to it. And I said, okay, well, I figured, well, that's the way I'll pay my way through college. If it's only open at night, I'd work half a night. He'd work half a night. And of course, we'd sell lots of pizzas. But it ended up I was working about 100 hours a week and losing my shirt, and I've been stuck there for 38 years.
What is it about Southeast Michigan? You started Domino's in Ypsilanti, Little Caesars, the Illich family, Hungry Howie started in Ypsilanti, Papa Romano's. What is it about the air in Ypsilanti and pizzas?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I know that it was Dino's and Little Caesars and us for years. Those others came along later. But I think they're just three or a couple individuals that that were big dreamers.
We're talking to Tom Monahan. And when we come back, we'll ask him how he went from one store to 6,200 stores. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Tom Monahan. Tom, you go from one store to eventually you had 6,200 pizza stores. How did you ever do that?
Well, I made a lot of mistakes, and I think you learn by making mistakes, and I think I made more of them than anybody. But I was always a big dreamer, as soon as the first store finally became successful, I was got into the second store right away, which was in Mount Pleasant, where I met my wife, and I figured if I could do it with one, I can do it with hundreds and maybe thousands. And I met Ray Kroc and John Y. Brown at some franchise seminars I used to attend, and I was impressed with what they did and didn't see any reason why I couldn't do the same thing they did with my concept, which I thought had as much potential for growth as McDonald's or Kentucky Fried Chicken. I had no idea at that time that McDonald's would be as big as they are. Had some very good people working for me, came up with some ideas that really caught fire, that really helped us. One was having a unique distribution system with fresh dough, which was never done before up to that time. And And another was coming up with a franchise system that we only franchised to internal people that came through the system that they had to manage a store successfully for a year before they could even apply. And then we didn't charge them an initial franchise fee. So we did it the hard way, but it was a long-term way because we got, generally, we got all good franchisees that knew the business. There were no absentee franchisees in Domino's. And we required that they, if they're a Domino's franchisee, that they're not allowed to be involved in any other type of business. They had to do it full-time to Domino's. And that worked very well. It took a lot of guts to have those strictest standards, but because we were getting kids that basically didn't know any better, and they weren't charging them an initial franchise fee, and generally we financed their stores for them, so we were able to be stricter, and it paid off.
While you're building Domino's, you accumulate some other things. You buy Drummond Island. You buy unbelievable antique cars. You start building a mansion outside Ann Arbor. You buy the Detroit Tigers, you buy yachts, you buy a helicopter, etc. Why did you do those things?
Well, those are all things I've dreamed of way back before I had anything, and I used to make lists, and I was ambitious that way, and I guess it's partly a combination of being so poor when I was young and having a pretty fertile imagination, I think the quest for those things was enjoyable.
You also had
I didn't buy Drummond Island. I bought built a lodge on it, and I owned part of it. There's 89,000 acres.
Okay.
I owned a good chunk of it, but not the island.
Well, there was one famous party I remember on Drummond Island, I think.
Infamous.
Your fascination with Frank Lloyd Wright. You bought some of his homes. What is it about Frank Lloyd Wright that fascinated you so much?
Well, I've always liked architecture. I was always interested in things visually. When I was 12 years old, just after I got out of the orphanage, I was in the Traverse City Library where I lived, and I saw a book. I was in the architecture section, and I saw a book about Frank Lloyd Wright. And I couldn't believe how beautiful these buildings and homes were. I mean, I remember Falling Water, and I remember Johnson's Wax Tower, and I remember Roby House, along with a lot of other ones. I thought, these are all by the same architect, and they're all so different, and they're all spectacular. And who is this guy? And so I was off to the races. I learned everything I could about the man and his work, and visited a lot of his homes all over the country. When I was in the Marine Corps in Japan, I'd go to Tokyo and hang around the Imperial Palace, taking pictures of it, and never could afford to stay there, but the Imperial Hotel, not the Imperial Palace. I was fascinated with his work. I was fascinated with the man. He was a character. Sang to a different tune than everybody else, and I kind of liked that.
You love sports. And in 83, you buy the Tigers. And then in 1984, this magical season. Can you talk about the 84 season?
Oh, man. It was so much so fast. I mean, it was such a big thrill to buy the Tigers. And that was such an adventure.
What did you pay for them? Do you remember?
I wasn't supposed to say, but I think enough. Mr. Fetzer's gone now. I paid $50 million plus assumed $4 million in debt. So $54 million. The paper said $44 million. 54, which was more than twice, I believe twice of any franchise, sports franchise of that time in history. I think 28,000 was the record, so I went way over. But I really didn't care because the Tigers were my team that I grew up with, and they were available, and I was going to pay whatever Mr. Fetzer wanted. It was a pretty big chunk because I only had about 1,100 stores at the time, and I was building a new headquarters building in Ann Arbor, so it was a little scary. But with that great first year, we made some money, a lot more than we projected, and so it was. But the idea of buying the Tigers was probably a bigger thrill than actually winning the World Series, if it could, anything could be bigger than that, because it was such a Mr. Fetzer was very clear. He says, if this gets into the media, the deal's dead. So we had to do everything in the most secretive ways that you can imagine. And then when it finally happened, it was such a relief and thrill. But then winning the World Series the first year was just frosting on the cake.
Who was your favorite ball player?
Oh, that's easy. That was, I had the team, Trammell. And my favorite player when I was a kid was Hoot Evers. Of course, everybody liked Hal Newhouser and Hank Greenberg.
Why was Trammell?
And he was a great player. I played shortstop when I was a kid, and he was a shortstop. And he was a great person, great player. I thought he should have won the Most Valuable Player Award in '87, and I think he got cheated out of that. And I'm sorry that he didn't make it as the manager, because I thought he'd be a great manager. And I certainly would have hired him if I owned the Tigers.
We're talking to Tom Monahan. When we come back, we'll ask him about the one chapter in one book that changed his life. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Tom Monahan, who believes that the most important thing in life is to get to heaven and take as many people as possible with you. Tom, can you talk about the book and the chapter that changed your life?
Well, that was a book by C.S. Lewis called Mere Christianity. And the chapter in there is called The Great Sin, and of course the great sin is pride. Now, I've always been taught by the nuns that pride is the greatest of all sins. It's the source of all the other sins, and so I knew that intellectually. This chapter in the book, and I think it was only about 6 or 8 pages, just hit me right between the eyes, and it basically told me that all the things I've accomplished, all the sacrifices I made, even the unselfish plays I made in sports, trying to make a spectacular catch, risking my body, and doing all those things, was only to impress people and be better than other people. I wanted a lot. Not, what did I want? More than others. I was always, if I knew, if I was pursuing something, I would want to know what's the best, what's the biggest, and I naturally would aim for that. And a lot of people thought that's good, and I thought it was good. I mean, and I would make sacrifices in my early years in the business. I would plow back into the business. I would go without things so I could have more later. Why? Because I wanted to have more than others. And that hit me right between the eyes. And I spent the night, after reading that, awake, going through my whole life. And I wasn't very proud of what I saw. And I decided that I'm going to have to change.
We're talking to Tom Monahan. And when we come back, we'll ask him about a millionaire's vow of poverty. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Tom Monahan, whose autobiography, Pizza Tiger, was published in 1986. You read this chapter, you don't sleep that night, and the next morning, you wake up and you take a millionaire's vow of poverty. What does that mean?
Well, that meant that I gave up all the ostentatious luxuries. I didn't give up comforts and convenience, partly because I'm married and I wouldn't impose all these on my wife. But I believe I can live in the little trailer I lived in when I was first we were first married, and I'd be perfectly happy. But I just decided I'm not going to drive nameplate cars. I'm not going to own any yachts. I'm not going to own any airplanes. All the things I've always wanted all my life. I'm not going to live in a big, grandiose house. I had started a house that was on a grand scale, and I had about $7 million into it, and I was only a third finished with it, and I stopped, and it's still there. Some of the most beautiful ruins. I showed it to Gardner Maida one time. It was under construction. He said, "Well, it used to be here." And it was a great sense of relief. And I don't fly first class when I fly commercial, when I fly tourists. And it was a great relief because all of a sudden, they come out with a new jet that's bigger and faster than all the others. And yeah, I used to, well, what I got to do to get that? Now I don't worry about it. And it's a relief.
That was 1991. In 1998, you've got 6,200 stores, and you sell Domino's for $1 billion. Why did you sell it?
Because I wanted to spend my time building this new university that I had started, and I felt that with all the responsibilities of running a multinational corporation, that it would be I wouldn't be able to do that. I thought that as much as I enjoyed the pizza business and the competitiveness of it, I've had this unrealistic feeling that if I had been in business long enough, we were going to have the vast majority of the pizza delivery business of the world. But I thought that doing something to help people get to heaven was a lot more important than selling more pizzas than anybody.
You talk about your five P's, your five priorities. Can you talk about them?
Yes, that's something I came up with when I was aboard ship in the Marine Corps and had nothing to do, and I was doing a lot of daydreaming about all the great things I was going to do when I got out of the Marine Corps and the success I was going to have and the things I was going to have. And I all of a sudden got this empty feeling, and I thought, well, if that's not important, what is? And then I started thinking, the best thinking I've ever done in my life. And I came up with these five priorities, which I tried to make a roadmap for my life, and I believe it. I hate to think where I'd be without it. And the first priority was spiritual. It's not something that was always forefront of my mind, but I knew intellectually that it was the most important thing because, at least the way I believed and was taught, that I'm going to die. We all know that. And when I die, I'm either going to go to heaven or I'm going to go to hell. And I know that I've been taught that hell is worse than anything I can imagine, and heaven is better than anything I can imagine, and it's forever. And so it just made sense that I better, regardless of what I do in this life, the next one I better be successful at. And so I had to be first and foremost, even though my inclinations were in a different direction. The next one was the relationships. I call it the social. And that is particularly a relationship with my spouse, but also with my children and everybody and anybody I come in contact with. And that means basically practicing the golden rule. And that is very important to happiness, to living a good life. And then the next one was called mental. That was using the brain God gave me. I've read that people only use about 10% of their brain, and with the capacity we have mentally, we can do just about anything we want, particularly in this country, and there's almost no limits. So I wanted to read a lot and learn a lot and how to be a better person and achieve the first two priorities. And then the next one was my health. I wanted to be healthy. I was smoking at the time, and I felt that it was important if I'm going to be a happy, fulfilled life that I die with my boots on and not steadily decline over the years and be less active and less active, not be able to enjoy my grandchildren and so on. So I said, I'm going to take care of my health. And I think I've done that quite well. Dr. Cooper at the Cooper Clinic examines me every year. He predicts I'm going to live to be 100. I hope he's right because I got a lot of work to do. And then the last one was financial. I had to get that in there because I was ambitious, and I never believed that money was a bad thing. The love of money is. And so I felt if I could have all the money I wanted, if the first four priorities were kept ahead of the last one, and then I can use the money for good things. And so that's my philosophy of life.
Many people criticize you for your beliefs and your actions. There's a lot of adjectives thrown out when the name Tom Monahan comes up, from brilliant, inspiring, reserved, persistent, opinionated, eccentric, a maniac. These are ones we can use on the radio. Where do you get the courage to keep going and, you know, walking to your road less traveled and your beliefs?
Well, I think having these five priorities certainly helped in my faith. I guess one of the things that bothered me for a very short time in the very beginning, I was built up in the media like very few people have early on. The Horatio Alger story, brought up in an orphanage, and the growth of Domino's, and then buying the Tigers, and then had a lot of glowing articles and things about me, but you know, they're all too good, really. But I had one that was very critical, and it was nasty, and it was mean, and it was by a writer here in Detroit, very long article, and the title of it was "What's Tom Monahan Really Like?" And then they began to cut me to pieces in the most insidious ways, and that bothered me. And after that, the criticism really didn't bother me that much. And in fact, what I would do is, if someone wrote a nasty article, I would say a prayer for him, and then I seemed to get over it just like that. When I had the tough times, if I hadn't had my faith, I don't know, my faith and my wife, I don't know how I got through some of the things that I've been through.
For most of us, God is the spare tire of our life. Something goes wrong, we jump in that trunk, we get that tire out, you know, you get me through this one, I'll start doing this, I'll quit doing this. For you, he seems to be the steering wheel of your life.
Jack, I only wish that were true. I mean, that's what I'm working towards, but I've got a long ways to go.
Well, a lot of us are working towards that. What advice would you give us?
Well, everybody's different. I think, first of all, we have to have some kind of relationship with God. We have to pray. I think that's the beginning.
How did you learn? You're very strong-willed. And you got strong ideas, you want this to happen, this to happen, this and to happen. How did you learn to surrender to God? You know, not my will, but thine be done.
I think it was the way I brought up. I don't know if I've ever learned that the way I should. I think you're canonizing me, and I'm not ready for that yet. Certainly, I've been told I'm strong-willed, and I would say that I'm. I tend to have a lot of confidence, I almost say cockiness, and I think that's because as they say, I'm a daydreamer. I think I usually visualize things better than most people, so it makes the. It doesn't seem as risky to take action on things that other people can't even. Can't see any logic to. And so I feel I'm, they don't know what I'm doing, but I know what I'm doing, and I can visualize the result, and they can't, so.
We're talking to Tom Monahan, and when we come back, we'll ask him what he's doing today, and his dreams and his journey today. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Tom Monahan, who was offered 35% of The Passion by Mel Gibson for $7 million, and you turned him down. Why?
Because I'm an idiot. No, I thought about it, but I decided not to do it. Actually, at the time, I was doing a movie on the Holy Father, a big mega movie, and I got caught up in some real bad people in Hollywood, and they were trying to take advantage of me. And the way that they did things in Hollywood really soured me. And so if it weren't for that, I definitely would have done it, because I was very close to. But I... And I think about that, and I think about how now we're trying to raise money to build dorms and classrooms at Ave Maria University. And we could do without a development department if I just said yes.
You met with Pope John Paul the Great 25, 30 times. I'd like you to talk about that, and also your meeting with him in 1987, where you decided to start Legatus.
Okay, well, when I met him in 87, that was the first time I met him, and that was after Mass in his private chapel. He had a reception for the people that attended, usually about 20, 30 people. And I was pretty shy. I didn't say much, but it was within an hour or so after that I got the idea that there ought to be an organization like Legatus. And the whole thing was crystal clear almost in the beginning. And I put together all the... policies, bylaws, structured meeting, organization chart. I did all that in a matter of two or three days. And basically, Legatus today is almost essentially and exactly the same as what they came up with in those first few days. And I think it was the Holy Spirit.
What is Legatus?
Legatus is an organization for Catholic CEOs. And the idea is to create a organization where Catholics who have more influence and more visibility and more leadership abilities than the average Catholic can get together and support each other and being better Catholics and serving the Church. And we bring in some of the top speakers in the country, have a big convention with the who's who of Catholic resources from around the world. And then we go to Rome every year and meet the Pope. And there's no project. The project is to help the members be better Catholics, and then from there to use their talents and to whatever the needs they see, because that's what CEOs do. They see needs and they fill them.
How many cities and how many members?
We have about 70-some chapters around the country, and we're adding about 8 or 10 a year, and there's about 2,100 members.
Another thing you've done is started Ave Maria University. Can you talk about that?
Well, Ave Maria University is something I've been thinking about for years. The idea is to have a Catholic university that's very strong in the spiritual area, very totally faithful to the teachings of the Church, and at the same time at the very highest academic standards. And I didn't see any Catholic university out there that did that or had the potential of doing that after being on the board of 5 different Catholic universities and 1 non-Catholic one. And so I decided the only way that's going to happen with all the tenure and all the baggage that these universities have was to start from scratch, and that's Ave Maria University.
You fought with Ann Arbor for years to try to put it there, and finally it didn't work out. You meet this Collier family in Naples. Can you talk about what you're doing outside Naples?
Well, we were going to buy about 4 sections outside of Naples, and for a very big chunk of money, when we got a call from the Baron Collier Company, who are the largest landowners in that part of the state. They used to own all of Collier County. They offered land to build a university because they wanted to build a town out there, a new town. It was about 25 miles inland from the coast. So we agreed that I would do that. They would give me the free land, and we ended up with the 900 acres. But we would buy 50% of the remaining 9,900 acres, so that we also would be the beneficiary of this a new campus in town. And we have had miraculously smooth sailing and getting to the point where we could start building. And we less than 3 years. And this is not just a subdivision. This is a town. This is with a total and complete infrastructure. Water and treatment plants and roads and utilities are all being put in by us. And we have the largest permit ever given in the state of Florida. It's 11,000 homes in phase one. And we've had over 20,000 inquiries from around the country of people that inquiring about buying a home in Ave Maria Town. And it was under construction, started in April, and it'll be ready to occupy homes in probably the spring of 07, next year. Pulte, I think the largest home builder in the world, headquartered here, is contracted to build 8,000 of these 11,000 homes in phase one. And the campus is projected to open in the fall of 07. And we're now on a temporary campus in Naples with about 400 and some students.
You've pledged $240 million of your own money for this, and also another $300 million to begin an endowment program. Can you talk about the church you want to build down there?
I guess that all adds up to not having anything left, and that's fine. The church?
Yes.
The church, which we call an oratory, is it's 100 feet tall at the nave. It seats 1,100 people. It'll be the chapel for the campus and the parish for the new town, it's inspired by the architecture of Fay Jones, who was famous for his chapels. We took it and blew it up to a full-blown church, and he was the top student of Frank Lloyd Wright's, and he was the man who was actually building the big house that I started and stopped in Ann Arbor. And we'll have a perpetual adoration chapel outside of it. And this in the plaza, the church sits in the plaza surrounded by the town center. There'll be retail on the first floor, and on the second and third floor to be office or condominiums. And that'll be the town center.
What's been more pleasurable, getting rich or giving it away?
Well, they've been both pleasurable, although there's been times in some of the early struggles and that it wasn't too pleasant. But I think it's certainly a lot more fulfilling giving it away, particularly the way I'm doing it, because I'm not just giving my money, I'm giving my time. I'm devoting full time to this type of work. I have no intention of retiring. I'll be 69 in March, and as long as I'm able, I want to work on this university.
What advice would you give to young listeners tonight?
Well, I would say that find something you love and stick with it, and you're sure of success.
When you dream like no one else I've ever met, time after time. This church you're talking about, biggest church in America.
No, it really originally was, but it got so expensive, Jack, that we had to cut it back. It was going to be 3,300 seats, which would be the largest Catholic seating. It wouldn't be bigger than the Basilica in Washington, but it would have more seating capacity. But that was just way too expensive. We more than tripled the original estimates, so we had to cut back.
Tom, thanks very much for coming. Thanks for having the guts to do all that you do. Our guest next Sunday will be the owner of Big Boy Restaurants, Bob Liggett. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because anything is possible. Spall home.